No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you... I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. Thanks for being with us for our last show of the year. I think we want to talk. I want to talk a little bit tonight about what we need to do going forward in 2019, and maybe talk a little bit about what's gone on in 2018. So, if you're out there listening, I hope you call so that we can have a conversation about this, because I really, really want to know how people feel about where we are in America today. I'm very troubled, to tell you the truth, about where we are in America today. We're very divided in this country, and I think we need to come together to face the problems that lie ahead. We know, for example, global warming has had a major impact this year. We've seen the terrible campfires in Northern California that destroyed paradise and killed 28 people. No, I'm sorry. I think it was 83 people that died in those fires. Fires in Southern California. All sorts of disasters all over the world. And time is running out. There's no time for us to delay in fixing the problems of global warming. And that's really the thing that I find most disturbing, is that we really can fix this. We can at least mitigate it by cutting down on our carbon footprint. We know the causes of global warming, and the cause is us. It's not a cyclical change. It's not just something that happens in the environment from time to time. It's us. If it were just a matter of a weather cycle, long-term weather cycle, there wouldn't be anything we could do about it. But as it is, we can make the difference here. We can change things. Many options have been proposed. Carbon tax, for example, to modify behavior. New government restrictions. But we see, on the one hand, denial in Congress by certain members, and opening up of additional what I would call carbon risks, like coal and fossil fuel, the easing of regulations on carbon. We should be moving as fast as we can to a totally green economy. If you're out there and you have a different opinion, please let me know. Have we come up with Maria yet, Doug? Is she out there? Hello. Okay. All right. Thanks. So, Doug, you chime in. What do you think?
Huh. I believe it could be all in the way we look at, we maybe need to look at the words and change the words, like global warming. You're not going to be as effective as maybe, I don't know, global changes or global extremes or global, you know, because people are automatically going to argue and say, well, there's really not global warming. There might be global cooling. And, you know, they go back and forth on an idiot. But really, it's just change in the entire atmosphere, in the plants, in the soil, in the planet itself. I mean, pollution gets to every level, right into the soil, right? And really, that's what you want to combat. And when we bring it around this global warming, and they can combat it, so it's terminology, you know, on some level, maybe how we express it. What was the, then you were discussing right after that, outside of global warming, and I was thinking, you know, there may be ways to bring people to the table that would open their eyes if we just use different words, I think. I don't know.
Well, that's a good point. I think that maybe global warming is not only a term that's not fully understood, because it does have repercussions as far as things that aren't warming, like violent storms. Violent storms are a part of the global climate change.
Right.
And when you talk about it internationally, when I go to Europe, for example, and talk about my issues, and global warming is always part of the international discussion that we have, they always talk about it as global climate change.
I like that.
Global warming.
Yeah,
it's true.
I like that.
Because it does. It affects things at every level. I heard a congressman from Florida today saying that by the year 2050, this is 32 years from now, 31 years from now, they think that Miami might be uninhabitable,
right?
Because of the rising seawater. So, you know, we're going to have to work together, and not only nationally, but we're going to have to work together internationally to solve this problem, because no one country can solve this. This is a problem that affects all of us.
Sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah, and it really bothers me. And it bothers me that we don't seem to be able to cooperate on anything these days. And I just don't get it.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's even like I just read this new article coming out in a post I read about the nitrates being used in meat, right? And it's to keep the meat pink. But those nitrates cause cancer. And it's like they don't really want, you know, that's just something. It's kind of like using a spray on your lawn to kill the weed. You know, it's going somewhere. It's going to create a problem, maybe. We don't look at those things as closely that I think are even more impactful to our health than, let's say, you know, some of these other matters, because we're doing it so, all of us, you know, these sort of things that we utilize that are really not good for the soil, which is what's impacting us the most. You know, it comes from the sky, comes in the soil. So I don't, maybe it's priorities. Sometimes I think that that's a huge priority, but we're not, you know, that's, we got to get to the cause, which is us here on the ground more than, you know, weather.
Well, you know what, the it takes a re-education too, doesn't it? Because
right.
I was brought up in a time where we thought all science was good. You know, everything we did, all, and I think we still have that feeling that, you know, all progress is good, all science is good. Mm. And now we're starting to find out that that's not the case.
Right.
You know, that things that our grandparents and great grandparents did made sense. They didn't just do them out of necessity. They did them because they made sense. I see over and over again. I'm always amazed when I look at neutropathic, you know, solutions to medical problems, and I think about and I hear about all these substances and natural things that people are starting to use now that my grandmother had in the medicine cabinet.
Mm.
You know, she used a lot of these things, you know, and now we're going back to place in preventive medicine. And so I think maybe we have to re-educate people
right.
and and say that, you know, you don't need to put a wax on an apple and make it shine to make it better. Yeah. You know, it can be dull and healthy and, you know, probably help.
Hit them closer to home. Hit them closer to home. You know, give them a vested interest specifically in how they're changing the thing. You know, actually knock on their door and make them physically have to do something regularly to acknowledge it. Yeah.
Well, and you know, that's something when we talk about the downside, we also have to talk about the upside. And one of the upside things, I think, is that we are concerned more about our health these days and preventative medicine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hardly know any middle-aged person anymore that doesn't do some sort of physical activity. When I was a kid, there were gyms, but there weren't, not like today, not like on every street corner. There were probably people that jogged in the morning, but you can go out in my neighborhood and see 100 people out on bikes and jogging and trying to take care of themselves. So, I mean, maybe that's the more positive thing, is that we're starting to, take note of how important these things are and embrace them.
Yeah.
To think that that's true.
Well,
maybe out there listening that has a different opinion, call in.
I had a guy tell me yesterday, Senator, about mopeds or electric mopeds, that there's an online app. You just get on a moped, drive around, drop it off wherever it is. It's like its own tracking device. It'll let other people know where it's at. But if you use this app, you can key into it. You know, you can take the moped anywhere you want and then just drop it off wherever you are. And you just, you know, it's kind of like an Uber moped, but everybody's driving these just things around, electric little mopeds. And I thought, boy, that's interesting. You know,
I'm sorry, Doug, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I thought, wow, that's interesting. I couldn't imagine what that environment would be like. He says, yeah, it can be a bit crazy at times, but I think that's genius.
Yeah, and we have everything but here in the District of Columbia. We have scooters. Do you have these things, these electric scooters that go 25 miles an hour and you can drop them off anywhere?
Really?
Yeah, and they're like the little scooters you used to ride when you were a kid. You know, they have a handle. They look like a skateboard with a handle on it.
Huh.
And they go up to 25 miles an hour.
And you can just pick it up, drop it off.
Yeah, pick it up, drop it off. You have a mobile app that you click on. They charge you so much a minute or you know, it's time-based. We also have little cars that you can do that
with.
That's
brilliant. I just heard of this yesterday.
Yeah, and the cars are all over the place.
Wow.
And in fact, it's funny. I'll tell you a funny story. I'm coming home one night, and there's in front of my house this parking spot big enough to park a tractor trailer. And there's somebody trying to park one of these little tiny cars, that, you know, two-seater cars that they rent in that space, and they can't do it. Hmm. They're trying like three or four times to do it, and they can't do it. So I'm out walking the dog, and I stop and I watch because I think, boy, this guy must be pretty drunk. Can't figure out how to get it in that spot. He could pull it in front, you know, he's trying to back in, but he could pull it in front, front ways. It would be really easy. And he finally gets close to the curb, kind of parks at an angle, and gets out of the car. And it's a child that I would say was about 8 or 9 years old driving the car. And so I thought, well, we can't have this, right? So I called the car company, and I tell them, I say, you know, I tell them who I am and where the car is. And they say, yes, we see the car. We see the car on our screen. We can see it parked in front of your house. And the woman said, this happens all the time. And I said, well, how can it happen all the time? And they said, well, all a child needs to do is get his mom's cell phone. And if she has the app, he goes up to the car, clicks the app, and gets in, and it's his.
Right.
Because the app makes thinks it's his mom.
Right.
So there's a little bit of a downside to it.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's a great idea. And you know, I realized years ago in New York City, because it's so expensive to own a car in New York, it costs maybe $400 or $500 sometimes to park it a month. In addition to your car payment and everything else, that every major apartment building has a little rent-a-car booth in it, because that's what people do in New York. A lot of them, they just use public transportation or they walk. And if they want to go somewhere where they need a car, they rent the car for the day.
It's just amazing.
I think it's a great idea.
I do too.
It sort of cuts down on carbon emissions.
Right.
And we really have to do that.
Right.
So that's the first problem that we have in coming together, I think. And then we have other problems as a nation, right? We're so far apart.
Huge.
Right now. The federal government closed down because we can't come to agreement on the budget and on this crazy wall thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing bothers me more than the wall. If you're out there and you think we should have a wall, I'd love to hear from you, because I think it's not only a waste of money, but I think that people want it. They don't want it because they think that it will keep anybody out. They want it as a symbol. They want it to, so that America stands up and says, stay away, don't come in, you're not welcome. Our great national symbol, one of them anyway, for many years has been the Statue of Liberty, right? With that great poem by Emma Lazarus, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, seeking, yearning to be free, free. That was what America was. Give us your huddled masses yearning to be free. Now we want to send out a simple symbol that says, keep your huddled masses and stay the hell away from the United States. And I think that's a horrible message to send to the world. And so I'm glad that we're standing strong at this point against building a wall. But, you know, on the 3rd of January, I get sworn in on the 2nd of January.
Yes.
With almost every other elected official in America that's serving a new term. And on the 3rd, which is Thursday of this week, Congress will change hands. The Democrats will take over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Democrats, I think, are going to stand strong against the $5 billion for the wall. The president seems at this particular moment to be intractable. And I wonder where that's going to lead us. You know, where are we going to be? Martin Luther King said it best when he said, an eye for an eye leaves everyone blind. And I think that's where we are right now. We're, you know, we don't want to give in to the Republicans, and the Republicans don't want to give in to the Democrats. And in the end, we all lose.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know.
Well, maybe it comes, maybe there, it'll be like, together. There'll never be a wall. It's not a wall per se, but more like a fence, just like barbed wire, where we need it. You see what I mean? Maybe the idea of a wall is taking it symbolically to, you know, to a degree where we're fighting over it on that level. Are there areas maybe where it needs a little bit more protection or a little bit more oversight? You know, maybe. I mean, we could argue on that. But the idea of a wall has made it too preposterous, because there's too many meanings, and in a historical sense, it's not been a good idea. We tried to bring down those walls, so it's not a good move. I don't really understand, you know, why a supposed intelligent man would allow for a move on that level. So I think he'd be up to interpretation, because he's a wheeler dealer. But you're right.
Well,
nobody's coming to the table to really talk.
Let's hope that's the case. And I think that, you know, in terms of why he would do this, why he would push so hard for his base, I think is it's really the oldest political ploy in America. You know, for we've always had an enemy to blame things on. You know what I mean? I mean, one of my favorite politicians was a benevolent dictator from Louisiana named Huey Long. He was corrupt, but he was a good guy in a lot of ways. He did a lot of really positive things for the everyday man. And he used to say, when he got elected, he used to say, there are 100,000 Frenchmen in New Orleans. Your house could burn down and your baby could drown, and not one of those Frenchmen would care. And that's how he got elected. You know what I mean? Wow. Because the average guy in the street, the French founded New Orleans. They were certainly more the upper class of New Orleans than other people, Cajuns and other people. And he used that. He pitted one group of people against the next. Mm. And, you know, I think that's very typical. You know, we had the Red Scare. We had the, when I was growing up, the Civil Rights Movement was going on. And you know, there were people that talked about, black uprisings, even though African-Americans have been among the most peaceful populations. White people have been a lot more angry and violent in our history than African-Americans ever were. There were plenty of politicians that tried to drive a wedge in between black people and white people. And so I think it's just very old canard in politics, and it's unfortunate, beyond that, and see that people are people.
Right.
You know, and I think, you know, it sells because, I think the average guy, working class guy, goes to McDonald's and he orders from the drive-in and he hears a person with a heavy Spanish accent. And then he goes home and he hears some politician say, people are sneaking across the border and stealing our jobs. And that resonates with him. Mm. Doesn't understand that my nice white American born children don't want to work at McDonald's. You know, immigrant labor has always taken jobs that the mainstream didn't want. But that doesn't register. What registers is, yeah, foreigner, yeah, job, yeah, you know. Sure. I get it.
What's the worst case scenario? And to let's drive that as a wedge. You know, they want to show the negativity, and that's all they show. And that's kind of what media seems to have done almost every point of view now. I mean, they show you the most, you know, the one piece that might be one out of 1,000, but because it's blared all over the news, it becomes the news.
Yeah, and because we have such competition in the media, right? Mm-hmm. When I was up again, didn't seem like that long ago, there were four TV stations in Washington, D.C., you know, and then there was that strange that UHF, you know, like there were a couple other stations on that, and not even all TVs got that, those channels, but the basic channels. Now, I have cable. I've got 300 channels. I've got 300 channels, and the beauty of it is some days I can go through all 300 channels and not find one thing worthy of watching. But also 20 news channels. You know, I can watch Fox or CNN or CNBC or my local news or news all over the country. If I want to find out what's going on in L.A., I can pull up a Los Angeles news station or Chicago news station. So there's all this competition to get the story, right? And so it becomes anything, and they carry it always to extremes. I think very often not taking the time that journalists used to take to verify things and make sure that things were accurate.
Like the big European paper, Das Spiegel, is it called?
Yeah, Das Spiegel.
I mean, here's the guy who wins all the awards for like, what, 8 years or something like that? He's just, or maybe 1 year, or he worked for 8 years, but he was lying the entire time. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Making up stories.
It's crazy.
I think the media now realizes that everything can be made. It's almost as if they feel like if it can be made up, bring in eyeballs, that's the score. And we allow for that. I mean, we do. We hold them to a lower standard than most, don't we? We allow them to get away with more just because they're considered media.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know what that means. You know, what does it mean to the intelligence of your average, you know, citizen?
Yeah, I mean, and if you see it on TV or you read it in the newspaper, it's true, right?
Right.
I mean,
not long ago, that was always the case, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So I think we need to develop some healthy skepticism, and maybe that's coming. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of the other positive things this year was the Me Too movement. You know, look at the people that were in highly trusted positions, like the doctor who abused all those young women gymnasts. And Bill Cosby, you know, America's dad, and, you know, people that have been trusted over the years, we're starting to see that we need a little more healthy skepticism when we talk about people in power or before we trust people. And of course, there's an upside and a downside to that. The upside may be that we'll see less abuse in the future, but the downside is we've lost lost some of our faith.
Yes. Well, maybe a lot more than some of.
Yeah. And you know, it's been a tough year for a lot of people. Mm. It's been especially tough for you, Doug. I know that you know, you've gone through a bunch of horrible losses lately. I've got to tell you that Paradise, California, I've never seen anything like that. And looking at all the images that have come out of there, I've never seen such devastation, such total devastation to an area. Is there anything left in Paradise?
Doug? Yeah, it's still, you know, tough to wrap the mind around.
Do you think it can be rebuilt?
Can it be rebuilt?
Yes.
I believe a fire can make something turn out even more beautiful afterwards. Some areas become more beautiful after a fire. I'd like to look at it positively, and it was a good location. You know, yes, it's a fire trap, but if they can get insurance in the area and they allow for more clearing around the homes, maybe they buried power lines underneath the ground, which I think is a brilliant idea. I don't know if they'll go that far. I would say, yeah, it'll be a place where they'll be more wealthy. I know that's, but, you know, the poor, most of the poor people live in that area. You know, half the homes were trailer house homes. So, you know, nobody at that level of income could afford to be there right now. So you'll have a lot of wealthier people probably buying up larger tracts, and it will become more exclusive over time. Could take 5 years, maybe 10 years, but, you know, as a long-term understanding, it's probably a very beautiful place.
Well, you know, we've seen, I guess that's the bad news. The environmental news is the bad news this year. And also, you know, more mass killings. We need to do something about guns in America. And that's another thing that bothers me, that we're so far apart, you know, that it doesn't seem like there's solutions there, that we've got two sides to this. One side that wants to allow people to arm themselves to the teeth, and another side that wants to eliminate guns altogether. And I don't know how we can get both sides to sit down, but I hope we can. I mean, a flash of positivity, certainly this year, were the kids from Stoneman Douglas High School who got together a rally. I went to that rally in Washington, D.C., and they did it in a few days, and they got 800,000 people, 800,000 people, just rally, high school kids. So, you know, that is shows what an amazing tool social media can be. But it also can be, something that divides us, because I don't care how crazy you are, you can go on the internet and put something out there, and I guarantee you'll find a bunch of other people that are just as crazy as you are that'll agree with you.
Sure.
And yeah, and that's strange. But then also, it's a great tool, you know, when I'm in the business of trying to motivate people on a cause for social justice, and
it plus can be the minus,
you know, but it can also be something that divides us.
Right.
We've seen the president use this tool to right. divide us.
Right.
I mean, you know, which is horrible. But
what a unique time to be alive, pulled on both ends of the magnet with the same sort of energy, and you know, living through it and answering things in this very tough and difficult time period where we are so divided. I think the younger generation are going to solve a lot of these problems. I think even the flow of information and new discovery, like inventions, let's say the laser beam, will stop the arguing over gun rights, because maybe in 30 years, 40 years, you know, a guy with a little laser pencil could do more damage than an automatic weapon, right? So other things will come into play which will solve some of these problems over a longer time period. That's kind of what I see. Yeah, and you work for that. You work for those sort of understandings, like stopping that sort of technology now, so when it comes, you're already prepared, rather than fighting on two levels. Oh, now we got to get guns out of their hand, and now we got to get laser beams out of their hand, and now we got to get, you see my point?
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely, we've seen that happen in other ways. For example, when I first started in the communications business, I had a political communications firm for 25 years, and much of what we did revolved around paper. It revolved around doing direct mail and get out the vote, a lot of mailings and things like that. Paper, deforestation was a major problem. It's become less of a problem because of the internet, because we don't use as much paper anymore.
Right.
We don't. Right. And when's the last time you sent a letter to somebody?
Right.
I don't even pay my bills anymore through the mail.
A newspaper should be outlawed. You should have to pay to, you know. but really, I think about it.
Smaller every day, I got to tell you.
Every newspaper, every magazine, you know, you should be able to have a handheld device that opens up. It shows you it there easily, right? Through a subscription rather than wasting paper. You could.
Well, I'm telling you, my offer to be the chairman of the Doug for President Committee is still open. I just wanted to know that. And we can start it right here. Look at how successful you guys were at raising money on the internet.
Wow.
You know, people love you guys.
Wow. That was, you know, there was
such... Of course,
such...
you got to be born in the United States. So that may put a damper on it. But at least secretary, we could get you Secretary of State or something. But you know what? I think we need to have the conversation that you and I are having right now.
Right.
We need to have that more and more. Just practical ideas that people have, and just being honest about the feel in order to work things out. You know, one thing that really brought things into focus for me a few weeks ago was the death of George Bush Sr., George H.W. Bush. I worked against Mr. Bush's, President Bush's election. I worked for Michael Dukakis. But I always had great respect for George Bush. I always admired him for his patriotism and his commitment to public service and his bravery. You know, he was the youngest pilot and still is the youngest combat pilot in the history of the American Armed Forces.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, he was an amazing man. He had we used to say he had the best resume in Washington, D.C. He was an ambassador. He was director of the CIA. He was vice president and president. You know, he really did everything in politics. And I don't know why we can't disagree. It seems to me we can't disagree with each other anymore, but still respect each other. You know what I mean?
Right.
Disagree with George Bush, but I had great respect for him. I disagree with Jane, but I had great respect for him. Sure. I think we're losing that. You know, now yes. I know everything about, you know, you tell me you're a Republican, I know everything about you. I tell you I'm a Democrat, you know everything about, you know, liberal, conservative, whatever the tags are. We figured you out without even sitting down and talking to you. And I think we have to find the commonalities that we have, right? We all love our children. We all love our country. There are things that we all share, regardless of what our opinions are. And those are the things that I think we need to connect on. Right. And I don't.
Right. I wonder if I put, you know, let's say if you put 30 different families across the country together, you know, would you divide them up 50-50, or is that just the way the media portrays it in some way to grab a 50-50, to make it closer, to see what I mean? I don't know. I don't know what numbers are any more. I don't know if any of the ratings online agencies are real or if it's all fake. You know, I don't know what percentage of information is flowing through big, you know, outfits of all these computers that are out there simply to distract, right? What's going on here with data movement? And because that's where everybody's attention is right now, on that flow of that data that big companies are capable of manipulating on a grand scale, not including the media. So those people have to be held to a different standard, I think, now. I don't know how you're going to do that too, because you want information to be out there that's not biased per se. It leads to a right left paradigm, you know, good, bad, all these absolutes. Nobody's really teaching them that we can come together and talk and nothing's, you know, absolute. But the media's not doing that. It's rather pushing that idea. It doesn't give room for concession. I think almost the politics of both parties are like that. Maybe the Democrats a little more so, but rightly so, because they got pushed that hard in the past.
And I think that's true. I think that that's some of what I'm talking about, you know, and I hope the Democratic Party, since I'm a Democrat, gets hip to it and makes some changes, because I don't like the word resist. You know, I understand it. I understand why people want to resist what's going on right now. But I'd rather see ideas like finding solutions and finding ways to cooperate, because resistance really doesn't get us anywhere. You know, I just finished recently, reading Hillary Clinton's book, and I was a superdelegate, you know, and the title of the book is What. Well, that bothered me, because it seems to me that it puts out there the idea that something happened that shouldn't have happened. She was supposed to be the president, and then something happened, something unnatural, something that shouldn't be there. And because of that, Donald Trump got elected. Well, I can tell you what happened. Hillary Clinton's what happened, and the Democratic Party's what happened. And you know, we can sit there and we can say that we won the popular vote because we got 3 million more votes. But the truth is that we understood how the Electoral College worked, and we played the game the same as the Republicans did. We lost touch with America, and we have to stand up and take responsibility for that and figure out a way to get back in touch with America, you know, and resisting, you know, to just resist will just keep us in the same place that we were. And, you know, we're about to start a new Congress later this week. And if that's the attitude they go in with, resist, 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 the people that will lose in this battle are the American people, because we won't move forward. And I think you're absolutely right about the media. We, you know, I don't know how we can hold them to a higher standard. You know, our First Amendment to the Constitution, the thing that we consider most important in our form of government, is to have a free and open media allowed to say whatever they want to say. And we see the repercussions, right, in not doing that. We see this Washington Post journalist who was murdered in Saudi, by the Saudi Arabians. So we need to have an open and a free press, but I don't know how we hold them to a higher standard. I really don't. But I think you're right. I think they need to be held to a higher standard.
Yeah.
I wish somebody out there would call in and give us their opinion, because I think these are important things that we're going to have to face in 2019. How to resolve something.
I think bigger issues are going to come out. I think we, you know, it's funny how we're all, you think your life is going straight ahead and, you know, you can see all the problems and everything out in the future and the obstacles, and bam, it sideswipes you.
Yeah.
That seems to be, you know, coming maybe for everybody a little bit. It feels like it's came for me, and maybe it will again, but, you know, there are these moments in life which can be so difficult or so hard, you have to sit back and make smarter choices or value things differently. And maybe that's something even America is going to be going through on some level, where it's going to, you know, it's going to get tough enough or hard enough or violent enough where we are going to come together and tackle some of these things.
Well, I hope that's the case. I hope we do come together. And we have seen certain issues where we come together, right? Certainly, again, to talk about the Me Too issue. You know, I think we've stood strong on this issue, that people understand, have a clearer picture of how women have been abused. You know, that I think that in the end, we saw through the Kavanaugh hearing, for example, a woman who was treated poorly, who was in the end treated like women have been treated historically. And one of the things that they complain about, you know, that their testimony is devalued and their feelings are not taken into consideration on the one hand. So the end result may have very much been the same, but there was lots of support for Christine Blasey Ford. She was a strong, brave woman who came in and stood up, just like the gymnast who I unfortunately can't remember her name, the young woman that came and uncovered the mess with the Olympic gymnastic team. You know, these women have come forth, and they have been, there has been great resistance to them, but there's also been great support for them, and women are starting to stand up behind them and say enough, no more. You know, we make up the majority of voters. We're an important part of the picture, maybe the most important part of the picture, right? What would any of us do without our mothers,
right?
Or our sisters or our wives, you know. So maybe that is a positive thing, that unfortunately there's still victims like Miss Ford and like all those young women gymnasts, but it's also causing us to take a harder look at the way things are have gone traditionally
in
society, and hopefully make some changes.
Right.
You know, one of the first things I did as a direct mail consultant was I did some work for a shelter for battered women here in Washington. And in order to prepare myself for that, I read the first national report on domestic violence in America. It was strangely done by the Ronald Reagan administration. But I was amazed. I was just amazed at the statistics. I had no idea how many women were subjected to sexual assault and physical abuse and mental and verbal abuse. I just, the numbers were just staggering. And they were hard to comprehend. But maybe we'll finally come to grips with some of this and make some positive changes that'll help women everywhere in our society. So that's, I think you're right. I think I have great faith in young people. I think they have a willingness to take on very tough problems. So I think our future, I don't want to be a crepe hanger here. You know, I want to say I have great faith in the future. And I really think that's what it comes down to. It comes down to having a little faith in each and our ability to work together and our ability to care about each other.
Right.
Don't do that. Time and time again, when it comes down to things like the California fire, how many people stepped up to the plate to help? You know, in New York City on 9/11, didn't people just come rush out into the streets and help their fellow New Yorkers who had been victims of the attack? We see this over and over again in New Orleans with the terrible effects of the hurricane. People just people just flooded down there, no pun intended, to help after Hurricane Katrina. So when it comes down to people helping people on an individual level, we seem to be very willing to do this. And so I think the big thing is reaching out. And that's one thing we've attempted to do on this show, people, is that we've attempted to reach out and try to find common ground with people. And now, since it's the end of the year, let me thank Doug and Don and Deborah and all the people at BBS Radio and Karen on my staff and certainly my gracious co-host, Maria Sanchez, who have all helped put this show together. And I hope in the coming year that we can have more and more guests that people find interesting and find a way to coalesce around each other. You know, we've had some great guests recently. We had Eleanor Clift from the McLaughlin Report. We had the former mayor of Washington, D.C., Sharon Pratt. We had Carol Schwartz, who was a councilwoman in Washington, D.C., and Ed Lazier, who was head of the D.C. Fiscal Policy Institute. And we hope to have even more interesting guests in 2019. Now, I can't believe that we'll ever have one that's more interesting than Doug, but we're going to go out there and try. And we hope that people will continue to listen and continue to call in and so we can discuss these things that are so important. And, you know, and again, Doug, thank you for everything you've done. BBS is a platform. I know that you were growing rapidly and had so many things in the works when this terrible tragedy struck Paradise. And I'm just hoping that you're able to get everything back on track and, you know, anything that I can do or my staff can do to help in that regard, we'd like to. We're very proud to be members of the BBS family.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're prouder to have you a part of our network. That is the honest truth. And I truly appreciate you, Senator, for everything that you represent and that you do.
Well, thank you. And you know what? That's another bright spot on the horizon, is that the internet can be used to do great, good things. You know, we've seen it in some of these GoFundMe campaigns where people are able to raise money to help with, you know, disasters that have befallen them. And we also see an open space for people to come out and honestly discuss issues. And again, that's what our show is about. You know, I was just on a show called, a podcast called Two Broads Talking Politics. And it's widely disseminated. We got lots of feedback from it. And there's a lot of shows out there that are giving people a platform for discussing issues. So maybe this is the medium that, you know, will advance the cause of cooperation in America. Let's really hope that that's the case. Well, I see we're running out of time here. And I just want to say next week, Maria and I are off. We both have things that need to be done. I'm being sworn in this week. If you're in the Washington area and you want to come to the swearing in, that would be great. It's at 2:30 at the Convention Center on Wednesday, January 2nd. I'll be sworn in for my third term. I want to thank the 180,000 Washingtonians that put their faith in me once again to reelect me. And I hope if you're in the area, you come and we see you. And we won't, as I said, we won't see you next week. But on behalf of Maria and I want to thank all of you for sitting out there and listening to us and being part of our show, our BBS family. We want to thank them. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Now we're going to play a song by John Hyatt, which says it all for me. It's called Have a Little Faith in Me. And I hope that in the coming year, we will all have a little more faith in each other. Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.